Welcome to International Edition, our new program taking a closer look at stories of the day, social media, and entertainment. I'm Susan Yockey in Washington. Ahead, analysis of the fight against Islamic State in Iraq, controlling a prosthetic arm with the brain. An old internet scam floating around again.
It's nothing new, but what we are seeing is a recent renewal in Japan, in Australia, in Western Europe. They really tend to be spreading very fast.
And the new music found on Bulletproof Picasso. It's all ahead for you coming up right here on The Voice of America. Iraq announced today it has started military operations to liberate the western province of Anbar from Islamic State insurgents. The announcement came after Vice President Joe Biden telephoned Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi to thank Iraqi forces for their, quote, enormous sacrifice and bravery against IS militants. VOA's Victor Beatty is following the story and joins us now here in the studio. Victor, what do you have?
Well, thank you, Susan. That phone call followed public comments Sunday by Defense Secretary Ashton Carter, who questioned the Iraqi forces' willingness to fight after the fall of the provincial Anbar capital of Ramadi. Now, I spoke with regional analyst Stephen Zunis of the University of San Francisco. He says Mr. Carter's comments reflect a more realistic assessment of the state of Iraqi security forces.
Unfortunately, what the Secretary of Defense said was pretty accurate. The Iraqi armed forces certainly were not up to the task in Ramadi. This has been a problem ever since the Bush administration decided to abolish the Iraqi army, which was a professional force, a secular nationalist bastion in that country, despite the abuses by the former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein. The army was replaced after its dismantling by a hodgepodge of Shiite militia, many of which are very sectarian and corrupt in their orientation, which had not only alienated much of the Sunni population, which helped lead rise to ISIS, but have also proven themselves, due to their corruption, to be an ineffective fighting force when facing this new challenge.
Well, Mr. Abadi on the BBC on Monday said the defense chief was misinformed and predicted Iraqi forces would take Ramadi back in days.
That is probably an over-optimistic assessment. They may be able to fight with the support of Iranian-backed Shia militia, but even if they were successful, this would only exacerbate the sectarian tensions which have led to the rise of ISIS in the first place. What we saw back when this region was threatened by al-Qaeda in Iraq, it was the Sunni militia that were the ones that ended up being able to successfully ward off that threat. They were supposed to have been integrated into the Iraqi army as part of the deal, which led them to switch sides and support U.S. and Iraqi government forces. But the Iraqi regime never came through with their end of the bargain. And as a result, ISIS was able to take advantage of the dissatisfaction in the Sunni-dominated region and march in and seize a number of the major cities. So if there's going to be any real success in fighting the ISIS threat, either it has to be through local militia, like Sunnis and Kurds and others that have the support of the local population, or forcing the Iraqi government to get its act together and put together a truly integrated armed force that represents the entire country, not just the Shia sectarian militia that form its base.
Stephen, do you agree with the view that Secretary of Defense Carter's remarks suggested the White House realized that a change in policy was needed?
This recognition is not new with the Obama administration, even though this is the most frank remarks we have heard from somebody in that high a position. And this has been the real dilemma for the United States. Clearly, the idea of bringing back American ground forces would not just be controversial politically, but could stir up a nationalist reaction in Iraq, which has bad memories of the U.S. invasion and occupation during the last decade. But also, the fact is that there is this real threat coming from ISIS, and there needs to be some way of combating it.
How likely is Iran to get more heavily involved in taking back some Sunni areas?
Well, a number of the Shia militia have been led by Iranian elements. But let's remember that the Badr Corps, which ended up being the core of the new Iraqi army, was originally organized, armed, and trained by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard during the years of exiles of the Supreme Council of the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, one of the major Shia parties in the current Iraqi coalition government. They even fought on Iran's side during the Iran-Iraq War. And indeed, part of the Sunni reaction to the government is the sense that the new Iraqi army is more loyal to the Persians and the Americans than it is to the people of Iraq. So on the one hand, Iranian involvement could make the anti-ISIS forces a more effective fighting force on a military standpoint, but would end up hurting the government's cause on a political level because it would just feed the ISIS propaganda that they are protecting the Sunni Muslim minority against what they see as an illegitimate Baghdad government.
That was Stephen Zunis, a regional analyst with the University of San Francisco.
So, Victor, is there more from that conversation with the Iraqi Prime Minister?
Well, Mr. Biden on Monday, in his conversation with Prime Minister Abadi, welcomed Baghdad's plans to mobilize additional troops and prepare for a counterattack to retake Ramadi, the provisional capital of Anbar. He pledged full U.S. support of Iraqi efforts to liberate territory from the IS group, including expedited training and equipment to address the threat posed by truck bombs.
Well, thank you very much, Victor.
You're welcome, Susan.
Okay, that's VOA's Victor Beatty right here in our Washington studios. You're tuned to VOA.
This is Science in a Minute. I am Rick Pantaleo. A new neuroprosthetic device developed by an alliance of California scientists has made it possible for a quadriplegic man to operate a robotic arm with just his thoughts and imagination. Eric Sorto, who lost use of his limbs about 13 years ago, is the first person in the world to have a neural prosthetic device implanted on the posterior parietal cortex, or PPC, which is the area of the brain where intentions are made. Most other similar devices being used today are usually implanted in the motor cortex. That's the part of the brain that directly controls movement. But since this newly developed device was implanted in an area of the brain that controls the intent to move, the researchers were able to develop a way to operate the robotic arm with a much more natural, smooth, and fluid motion. And that's your Science in a Minute.
Hey, joining me is reporter Michael Lippin, and he has been very busy looking at what's happening in social media today. Michael, you've got the floor. Share away.
Well, thanks, Susan. I have been looking at what our audience has been saying about the Ramadi story on our social media platforms. On the VOA website right now, the article about Iraq launching the operation to reclaim Ramadi is one of the top stories. We posted that story on the VOA News Twitter account, and that post has a comment from Twitter user Sarah in the UK. She replied to our tweet with a message, "My thoughts and prayers are with the Iraqi forces facing off against the Islamic State group." Now, on the Voice of America Facebook page, we posted a video from Sunday of Iraqi government forces and their tribal allies in the city of Khaldiyah, which is near Ramadi. That video has had more than 7,000 views so far, more than 250 likes, and 36 shares. It also has a comment from Facebook user Ozymandias al-Menejle, who lives in the Iraqi Shiite holy city of Najaf. He said, "Good job to those Iraqi government-backed forces."
Well, people are really excited about this topic, and everybody's got their eye on it. What is the rest of Twitter having to say about Ramadi?
Well, it's true. Elsewhere on the web, the Twitter analytics website Topsy says Ramadi has been mentioned in at least 12,000 tweets over the past day. It also has a Topsy sentiment score of 33 out of 100, meaning that only about one-third of those tweets about Ramadi are positive. Now, if we look at some of the tweets that have been getting a lot of attention mentioning Ramadi lately, one is from a social media blog called PJ Tatler. It says, it points out that Ashton Carter's comment about Iraqi forces having no will to fight those Iraqis faced multiple Oklahoma City-sized bombs in the fall of Ramadi. And that tweet is sort of highlighting that the Iraqi forces who pulled out of Ramadi actually faced a major onslaught that they probably weren't expecting. So that could explain one reason for their hasty retreat. Another tweet comes from the Wall Street Journal. It has a tweet for an article about how the Islamic State's win in Ramadi reveals the new weapons, tactical sophistication, and prowess of that militant group. We also have a tweet from Twitter user Muslima, who has the login at @_Muslima_01. It has a tweet saying, "We congratulate the Islamic State for conquering Ramadi and Palmyra, which is in Syria. We here at Bayt al-Maqdis are waiting for your army." And there's a picture of someone holding up a handwritten note in Arabic in front of what appears to be the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem. Susan?
Oh, well, thank you, Michael. And that's reporter Michael Lippin. We'll be right back after this short break.
This is Marty Johnson, and here's what's going on around the world in news. Iraqi forces have launched an operation to retake the western province of Anbar from Islamic State militants. The announcement on state television comes less than 2 weeks after ISIL fighters seized Ramadi, the provincial capital. Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi is expressing confidence that Ramadi will be retaken in days. U.S. Vice President Joe Biden telephoned the prime minister to reaffirm American support after the defense secretary publicly questioned the will of Iraqi troops. The Russian military began a new round of exercises today, coinciding with NATO's military maneuvers in the Arctic at a time of escalating tensions in the region. 700 units of military equipment, 12,000 Russian troops, and up to 250 military jets are involved in the Air Force drill, which began Monday. That same date, fighter jets from the U.S. and eight European nations began Arctic Exercise Challenge 2015. A heat wave in India has left more than 500 people dead, with temperatures soaring as high as 48 degrees Celsius. I'm Marty Johnson.
Coming up on International Edition, a social media bug emerges again, and a new album from Train. There's an old internet scam floating around that's getting some new attention lately. It's called ransomware. And if you're unlucky, it may have already infected your computer or mobile phone. Joining us now is VOA cyber correspondent Doug Bernard. So, Doug, what's this all about anyway?
Well, Susan, recently the FBI issued a public warning for people in the United States, alerting them to a recent spread in ransomware. Now, ransomware is basically a bug, a bit of malware. These bugs have been around since at least the early 90s, so it's nothing new. But what we are seeing is a recent renewal in Japan, in Australia, in Western Europe. They really tend to be spreading very fast. So here's how it works. Basically, your computer is infected. Perhaps you click on a link that you shouldn't, or maybe you're not using antivirus or something like that. So a bug, a bit of malware, lands on your computer, and quietly it encrypts certain kinds of files on your computer. And these types of files are things that are traditionally called user-generated, so Word documents, spreadsheets, pictures, videos, that kind of thing, things that you probably, that mean a lot to you. So when you go and try and access one of these files, you get a little pop-up, and the pop-up basically says, your files have been encrypted, we're holding them ransom, and until you pay us, say, maybe $300, you're not going to get them back.
Well, is this just a scam, or do you really get your files back?
Well, one analyst I spoke with says, you know, this is really a business of sorts. So in some ways, it's a scam. The bad guys are trying to extort money from you. But they want it also known that if indeed you pay them, say, $300 or something, that indeed they will give you that key and you will be able to unlock your files, because chances are, you'll mention that to somebody else. The word gets around that for a fee that's sort of troublesome, but, you know, $300. Maybe for some people that's troublesome and irritating, but, you know, worth it to get their important trusted files back.
But you have to trust a crook.
You do have to trust a crook. But again, if you're thinking that the crooks make their money from this, if it becomes known that they're just scamming you out of $300, then nobody's going to send the money anymore. But if it gets out there that indeed, you know, if you pay up, you'll get the key and you'll get your documents back. That's actually to the benefit of the bad guys.
Well, how do you protect yourself from this?
Well, once you're infected, unfortunately, there's basically nothing that you can do. These ransomware bugs use very strong encryption, encryption levels essentially that the NSA couldn't even break. So the thing that you need to do is mitigate to protect yourself in case that you are infected. That means back up your computer. Back it up often, and back it up maybe to several different locations that aren't connected permanently to your computer, external drives. It's also just very important, again, to use a antivirus program. Symantec, Kaspersky, Norton, there's a bunch out there, and they are pretty good at sniffing out these bugs before they actually infect your computer.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Doug.
Hope you keep safe out there.
Thank you. That's VOA cyber correspondent Doug Bernard. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal. Or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
The Grammy Award-winning San Francisco-based band, Train, has a new album, Bulletproof Picasso. VOA Border Crossings host Larry London gave it a listen and talks about it with my colleague Bob Doty.
When I think about my problems and I truly understand in a world like this, being a white man, I'm ashamed that I complain. I'm not sure that I know pain, but I know this. I'd give it all for one more night with you. I'd give it all for one more night with you.
Larry, we're talking about Train.
Yes,
we
are.
Who's on the track?
Who's on the track? Well, Train's on the track. Train have a new album out, which is called Bulletproof Picasso. It's their seventh album since they began in 1993 together. Their first album, 1998, which was called Train, went platinum and had a huge hit for them, a song that was called Meet Virginia. And then several years later, in 2001, they put out another album, which called Drops of Jupiter. The title track earned them two Grammy Awards that year.
Two Grammys. Wow.
And we were just listening to a song off the new album, Bulletproof Picasso. The song is called Give It All, which Pat Monahan, the lead singer of the band, says it kind of reminds him of the fact that May is Mental Health Awareness Month.
Oh, yeah.
And the song is very powerful. It has a message about loss and about healing and about letting go. So the band feel that this single is very timely for this particular month and what we're thinking about at this time.
So this is the latest current hit for them?
Yep, it's their new song, and it's, as I say, off the seventh album, Bulletproof Picasso, which for the band Train is kind of a little departure over the last couple of albums, because recently in the last few years they've released albums about their home, San Francisco, California.
Right.
And so, like, the last album they had out was called California 37, which is the name of a highway in San Francisco that runs through San Francisco. So it's very interesting. They love San Francisco. They've just started a wine company. How many bands have their own wine?
I can't think of one of them.
You can't think
of,
well, no. Now there's Train. So you can add that to your list.
But they
list.
Can load up all their wines on the train.
That's it.
Oh, no. I didn't say that.
But, you know, some of their wines include the Save Me San Francisco Wine Company. They've released Drops of Jupiter California Red. They've got, these are names of their songs, Soul Sister, Pinot. They've got California 37 Cabernet. So obviously they're playing off of some of the names of their songs or albums, which is kind
of
cool.
And not one of them's called Grapes of Wrath.
None of them. No Grapes of Wrath.
Well, maybe that'll be the next album. Now, they were formed in 1993 out of where you said San Francisco. They are an American rock band. That's quite a few years for them. They're still quite popular.
Yes, they are. In fact, they're on tour with The Fray right now, doing a world tour. And, I love Train's music, and I have for a number of years, and their music's appeared on TV shows and in film, and, in fact, recently Train performed at the Earth Day concert here in Washington, D.C.,
oh, yeah.
Which is where I had a chance to meet and speak with Pat Monahan, the lead singer of the band. When Train started, Pat revealed to me, when they first started, they were a Led Zeppelin cover band. They sang Led Zeppelin songs.
So that was some of their influence.
Yes, definitely.
Led Zeppelin from way back.
From way back when?
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Bob.
Larry London, our Border Crossings host, talking about the American rock band from San Francisco, Train. Don't worry about me.
Like to wish a belated happy birthday to the world's oldest known person, Geraldine Talley. She celebrated her 116th birthday with her church congregation in the northern U.S. state of Michigan Sunday. Talley lives in the Detroit suburb of Inkster. She was born on May 23rd, 1899. Unfortunately, it's the way of gaining the title Talley became the world's oldest person only after the death of Gertrude Weaver. At age 116 in Arkansas in April. That's according to the Gerontology Research Group, which keeps track of the ages of the world's longest living people. Talley credits her long life to her religious faith, and you know what? She never smoked or drank alcohol, and her only surgery was to have her tonsils out. I wonder if she cussed.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is a Pacific nation, and as such has an enormous stake in the people and future of Southeast Asia. The region is home to some of our largest trading partners and buys many of our exports, supporting millions of American jobs. We need partnerships with the Philippines, Thailand, Indonesia, Singapore, and Vietnam, and other nations there to meet the challenges of growing our economy, preventing nuclear proliferation, and addressing climate change. The U.S. works constantly to strengthen old alliances there and deepen new ones. Toward that end, top U.S. officials met recently with their counterparts in the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, in the 28th in a series of annual dialogues aimed at reinforcing our strategic partnership with the region. Both parties reaffirmed their commitment to jointly realize solutions to pressing global, regional, and transnational issues affecting the region, including climate change, illegal, unregulated, and unreported fishing, humanitarian assistance and disaster relief, and recent developments in the South China Sea. The United States and ASEAN also discussed the migrant situation in Southeast Asia and the need to work expeditiously to save lives and to address the underlying challenges that contribute to the migration. The very productive discussions in the dialogue are a tangible demonstration of our commitment to the rebalance of U.S. foreign policy towards Asia.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials. We'll be right back.
I didn't get to say goodbye today, and I missed that, so my director allowed me to stay to thank you for tuning in to our program, International Edition. You know, if you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, come on by our website at voanews.com. That's voanews.com. You can go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner and scroll down to International Edition and hit the Listen button. And there you'll be. You'll be listening to any of the International Editions you want to. We've got a lot of other things on there as well, so I hope you'll come on by to voanews.com. I'm Susan Yawkey, reporting to you from Washington.